20 years ago, I was living in Clonmel, and I was in a writers, a group called Clonmel Writers. One week we had a group down from Wexford, and we had a great night out with them in a pub there. And one of the Wexford poets read a poem, and I liked the poem, and I asked him for a copy of it, and he gave me a copy of it, and I have it here. So I don't know what happened to him after in terms of did he get published or anything, but I always enjoy the poem, so I'm going to give an airing tonight. It's called Bardo File. He has done the state some service, but doubts if anyone knows it or cares. Leaving the toilet, he quotes, "For this relief, much thanks." Not caring if his hearers think Hamlet is just a cigar or a small village like my glass. He regrets that in and since his youth he wasted time, and now that time wastes him. He can list the Chamberlain's men, Burbage, Kemp, Armin and the rest, and knows the Curtain, Fortune and Globe intimately, though his entire foreign travel comprised one day trip to Fishguard. But every night he checks a small change for portraits of the Queen to put into his Toby jug for Stratford. And I forgot to mention the poet actually, Fintan Murphy.
Thank you, Carl. And yes, if you could please say the name of the poet and the title of the poem, that would be great. Thank you. Next up, a friend to us all and one of our favourite poets, Billy Randall.
This is a poem by probably Cork's greatest poet, in many people's opinion, Sean O'Riordan. And this is a Filarish, okay, it's a Mottam Ardus McQuid Batun. Filarish. Fog long in the alt here, is a will de show or derna idil. Doomed intin or a harla, o bulug cock on toile. Is on orga will on tuluk trum, is on boher fodder. Wind at viower, shahar hevealt up don verla, Shelley Keats is Shakespeare. Fill the reach or the quid. Ni dintin is ni. The hyonga a kui kangilda igorerev, vi bonos kun the derim. Den dishtin is den, she a con let gunin fenig. Is let hiksha fain is na tregiad. Ni dool the knock a hig na hrav a regan. Their favour in the falla share, tronona graine go corcaguina. Is kifi here, a bun na spera, a rahi up down, on ivorie is on mo fa hiduk, is on tishal garamuk, or veil of dina. Shine de duris, doom clean fe hullis on tronona. Bool is us glofer, dintin fain is the glow cart.
Camila, how are you? Samesh, Joe Sweeney.
Oh dear God, here I am again singing. Merciful hour. There were two poems in this old volume that I found, this old dusty volume of faithful songs and poems. Well, it's, and they've both been put to music. One was by Yeats, and this one was by John Masefield, 19th century poet laureate. And the poem is entitled Sea Fever, and I must get my note from this. I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky. And all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by.
And the wheels kick and the wind's song and the white sails shaking and the grey mist on the sea's face and grey dawn breaking. I must down to the seas again, for the call of the running tide is a wild call and a clear call that may not be denied. And all I ask is a windy day with the white clouds flying and the flung spray and the blown spume and the seagulls crying. I must down to the seas again, to the vagrant gypsy life, to the gull's way and the whale's way, where the wind's like a whetted knife. And all I ask is a merry yarn from a laughing fellow rover, and quiet sleep and a sweet dream when the long trick's over.
Are you glad you came? Next up, Emily Davis Fletcher.
Poet like myself, his name's Langston Hughes. He was an African-American poet writing in like the 20s, the 30s. It's called Mother to Son. Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor. Bare. But all the time, I's been a-climbing on and reaching landing and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn your back. Don't you set down on them steps, because you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now, for I's still going, honey. I's still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.
That's a great poem. That was in the Poetry Film Festival as well. Great poem. Okay, Seamus Harrington, please.
Thanks, Bob. This is about John Betjeman's poem.
Oh,
Subaltern's Love Song. Otherwise known as Miss Joan Hunter Dunn. Commonly believed to be imagination, totally. But 5 or 6 years ago, this lady died. And it was revealed she was the muse. She was aged about 95 at the time. And that was her real name. So, Miss Joan Hunter Dunn. Miss J. Hunter Dunn, Miss J. Hunter Dunn, furnished and burnished by all the shot sun. What strenuous singles we played after tea, we in the tournament, you against me. Love 30, love 40, oh weakness of joy, the speed of a swallow, the grace of a boy. With carefulest carelessness, gaily you won. I am weak from your loveliness, Joan Hunter Dunn. Miss Joan Hunter Dunn, Miss Joan Hunter Dunn, how mad I am, sad I am, glad that you won. The warm-handled racket is back in its press, but my shock-headed victor, she loves me no less. Her father's unanimous shines as we walk and swing past the summer house buried in talk. And cool the veranda that welcomes us in to the 6 o'clock news and the lime juice and gin. The scent of the conifers, sound of the bat, the view from my bedroom of moss-dappled path, as I struggle with double-end evening tie, for we dance at the golf club, my victor and I. On the floor of her bedroom lie blazer and shorts, and the cream-coloured walls are betrophied with sports. and westering questioning settles the sun on your low-headed window, Miss Joan Hunter Dunn. The hillman is waiting, the lights in the hall, the pictures of Egypt are bright on the wall. My sweet, I am standing beside the oak stair, and there on the landings the light on your hair. By roads not adopted, by woodland and ways, she drove to the club in the late summer haze. Into 9 o'clock Camberley, heavy with bells and mushroomy, pinewoody, evergreen smells. Miss Joan Hunter Dunn, Miss Joan Hunter Dunn, I can hear from the car park the dance has begun. Oh, sorry twilight, importunate band, oh, strongly adorable tennis girl's hand. Around us are Rovers and Austins afar, above us the intimate roof of the car. And here on my right is the girl of my choice, with the tilt of her nose and the chime of her voice, and the scent of her rap, and the words never said, and the ominous, ominous dancing ahead. We sat in the car park till 20 to 1, and now I'm engaged to Miss Joan Hunter Dunn.
Thank you, Jonas. If you do have short poems, they would be appreciated if you say. But I mean, if you've no choice, you've no choice. You're great. Next up, Jean Curtain.
Okay, you'll be delighted if it's short. Some years back, Desert Brady brought up this book of poems, the Kurdish book of poems. Love and Liberty, Desmond and Grady, he's a Kinsey poet, and it's a short poem. I've got to get the name of the poet right now because it's Kurdish, and I don't know what it's called, obviously. Shirko Bekas, 1940, that's the title. That's the name of the poet. The title is Separation. If you pluck off the roses of my poems, one of the four seasons of my poetry will die. If you exhale love, two of my seasons will die. If you take away the beat, three of my seasons will die. If you take away my liberty, all the four seasons will die, and I will end. Thank you.
Now we have Miss Julie Field.
A short poem entitled Tides by Basman Blue. Tides. Winds blow, ocean tears within us, to and fro. Waves wash soul and senses into the far and return. Sun rays smile up, water droplets and dry, sorrowful faces.
Thank you, Judy. And Russell
Right. In Limerick, I was asked to read some German poetry, and my mind went completely blank. I bought myself, not after that, but I bought myself a 20th century German poetry anthology, German versions and translations, edited by Michael Hoffman, who's one of the translators for German poetry, and I chose a part of a poem by Bertolt Brecht. I'm going to do both versions, they're very short, so it's fine. And it's a part from Bukova Elegien, the Bukho Elegies. German first. Die Lösung. Nach dem Aufstand des 17. Juni ließ der Sekretär des Schriftstellerverbands in der Stalinallee Flugblätter verteilen, auf denen zu lesen war, dass das Volk das Vertrauen der Regierung verscherbelt habe und es nur durch verdoppelte Arbeit zurückerobern könne. Wäre es da nicht doch einfacher, die Regierung löste das Volk auf und wählte ein anderes? Jetzt haben wir das durch. I'm going to allow myself a little change in this translation. The translation was done by Derek Bauman, and I'm sorry, I have to change that one bit because it just doesn't make it clear the way he translated it. The solution. Oh yeah, and we did have a revolution in Germany as well in 1918 on the 17th of June, which failed, basically. So, the solution. After the uprising of the 17th June, the secretary of the Writers' Union had leaflets distributed in the Stalin Alley stating that the people had forfeited the confidence of the government and could win it back only by double the work. Would it not be easier in that case for the government to dissolve the people and elect another? Come.
Thank you, Sue. The next we have Michael O'Callaghan.
I have a serious one and a funny one. How sweet to be an idiot. As harmless as a cloud. So you have a... How sweet to be an idiot. It's got to be as... I retire. Seriously. Does he got a pair of glasses? They don't give up.
Retire here, you just die.
Oh, God. No regrets, Coyote. We just come from such different sets of circumstances. I'm up all night in the studio, and you're up early on your ranch. You'll be brushing out of Bob Mare's tail where the sun is ascending. I just be getting back to my reel to reel. This is Joni Mitchell. There's no comprehending just how close to the eyes and the lips you can get. And feel unrelated, and still feel related. Give me glasses, Christ. You put her in this Eskimo, in this flame. I've run off to wrestle with my ego, and with this flame that you put in this Eskimo, this prisoner of the white lines, of the fine white lines of the free freeway. No regrets, Coyote. She's in the dance hall. We've just come from such different sets of circumstances. I'm up all night in the studios. This is Roberta Joan Anderson, written, born in 43, and married Chuck Mitchell, so she became Joan E. Mitchell in 1965. We just come from such different sets of circumstances. I'm up all night in the studios. You're up early on your ranch. You'll be brushing out of Blue Mare's tail while the sun is ascending. And I'm just beginning home with my reel to reel. There's no comprehending just how close to the bone and the skin and the eyes and the lips you can get and still feel so alone and still feel related like stations in some relay. You're not a hit and run driver, no, no. Racing away, you just picked up a hitcher, a prisoner of the white lines of the freeway. We saw a farmhouse burning down in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night. And we rolled right past that tragedy till we turned into some roadhouse lights where a local band was playing. Locals were kicking and shaking on the floor, and the next thing I know, that coyote's at my door. He pins me in the corner and he won't take no. He drags me out in the dance floor and we're dancing close and slow. Now he's got another woman at home. He's got another woman down the hall. He seems to want me anyway. Why'd you have to get so drunk and lead me on that way? You just picked up a hitcher, a prisoner of the white lines of the freeway. I looked a real coyote right in the face on the road to Belgiani, near my old hometown. He went running through the whisker wheat, chasing some prize down, and a hawk was playing with him. Coyote was jumping straight up and making passes. He had those same eyes just like yours under your dark glasses. Privately probing in public rooms and peeking through keyholes and numbered doors where the players lick their wounds and take their temporary lovers and their pills and their powders to get them through this passion play. No regrets, Kylie. I just get off, I'll bet, always. You just picked up a hitcher, a prisoner on the white lines of the freeway.
Sorry, I really love the poem. I'm just worried about time.
We're on the fourth verse. He's staring at a hole in his scrambled eggs. He picks up my scent on his fingers while he's watching the waitress's legs. He's too far from the Bay of Fundy, from Appaloos and Eagles and Tides, and the air-conditioned cubicles and the carbon ribbon rides. Are spelling it out so clear. Either he's going to have to stand and fight or take off out of here. I try to run away myself. To run away and wrestle with my ego and with this flame you put here in this Eskimo, in this picture, Johnny Mitchell's partially Eskimo. To run away and wrestle with my ego, with this flame you put here in this Eskimo, in this hitcher, in this prisoner of fine white lines of free, free way. Thank you for indulging me.
Thanks, Michael. Sorry I interrupted you there. Next up we have Alan Slockhart.
This is a poem by Patricia Walsh. It's her first collection of poetry and it's called Continuity Aries. That's the book, not the poem. The poem is called February, March. It is cold, not in the weather sense, but inwardly. I cannot live, yet I do as everyone else does, stammer through it. Icicles snap in my abdomen, shattering their music as they go. I am a victor, bedecked with medals and garlands that bear no relation to the prescribed feelings in hand. I am a victor, nevertheless, where fields of daisies grow unperceived and coldness can only snap and fall. I am a victor, while it is still cold, where nothing can breed under the shadowy sun but by my own will.
Yeah, Patricia has been to more avails than almost anyone. Just happens to be in Wexford. Carol Hayes, please.
Hi, this is a Carol Angelou poem and it's called If I Was Dead. If I was dead and my bones had dripped like dropped oars in the deep churning earth, or drowned and my skull a listening shell on the dark ocean bed. If I was dead and my heart soft mulch for a red, red rose, or burned and my body a fistful of grit thrown in the face of the wind. If I was dead and my eyes blind at the roots of flowers wept into nothing, I swear your love would raise me out of my grave. In my flesh and blood, like Lazarus, hungry for this and this and this, your loving kiss.
Carol and Duffy. Okay, Wagner Miranda.
This was written by a Brazilian writer, Ana Huches, and I there translating it, but she didn't complain, so it's called Commonplace, number 7, The Civil Society. Every second, a black child gets eaten with yellow fever's mustard. Every second, a football pitch of green forest is eaten with red sauce of mud. Every second, every second, every second. And that meeting never seemed to end. I was craving for popcorn.
Thanks, Barbara. And next we have Marianne Bartlett.
This is my favourite poem, and it's out of the wonderful Staying Alive trilogy by Bloodaxe, and it's called Snow by Vladimir Poland. It's translated from Czech. Snow. It began to snow at midnight, and certainly the kitchen is the best place to sit, even the kitchen of the sleepless. It's warm there. You cook yourself something, drink wine. and look out of the window at your friend eternity. Why care whether birth and death are merely points when life is not a straight line? Why torment yourself eyeing the calendar and wondering what is at stake? Why confess you don't have the money to buy Saskia's shoes? And why brag that you suffer more than others? If there were no silence here, the snow would have drained it off. You are alone. Spare the gestures. Nothing for show.
Thank you, Marianne. Next we have Kieran McCartan.
This is a rap by Scroobius Pip. And more importantly, this is a letter from God to man. Hey there, how's it going? Long time no see. I know I haven't been around much lately, but it didn't seem like you wanted me to be. Last time I sent down a message, you nailed it to the cross, so I figured I'd just leave you to it, let you be your own boss. But I've been keeping an eye on you, I have, and it's amazing how you've grown, with all your technological advancements and the problems you've overthrown, and all the beautiful art you've created with such grace and such finesse. But I admit there are a few things I'm afraid that impress me less. So I'm writing you to apologize for the horrors committed in my name. Though it was never what I intended, I feel I should take my share of the blame. A lot of the good I tried to do was corrupted when organized religion got into full swing. What I thought were quite clear messages were taken to unusual extremes. My teachings taken out of context to meet the agendas of others. Interpretations were made in many different ways and hidden meanings discovered. Religion became a tool for the weak to control the strong. With all these new morals and ethics, survival of the fittest was gone. No longer could the biggest man simply take whatever he needed, because damnation was the price if certain rules were not heeded. Some of the deeds committed in my name made me think where I went wrong. Back at the start when I created all this, the foundation seemed so strong. See, all the elements were already here, long before I began. I just kind of put them all together. I didn't really think out a long-term plan. I made the sun an appropriate distance, laid the stars across the sky, so you could navigate the globe or simply watch the sunrise. I covered the earth with plants and fruits, some for sustenance and some for beauty. I made the sun shine and the clouds rain, so their maintenance wasn't your duty. I tried to give each creature its own attributes without making them enveloped. I gave you all your own space to grow and in your own way space to develop. I didn't know such development would cause rifts and jealousy, cause you to war against each other and leave marks on this planet indelibly. See, I wasn't the creator. I was more the curator of nature. And I want to set things straight with homosexuals right now. I don't hate you. I was a simple being who happened to be the first to wield such powers, but I just laid the ground. It was you that built the towers. It was you that invented bombs and the fear that comes with them. And it was you who invented money and the corrupt economic systems. You invented terms like just war and terms like friendly fire. And it was you that didn't know when to stop digging deeper or when to stop building higher. It was you that exhausted the resources I carefully laid out in this earth. And it was you that even saw these problems coming but credited them for little worth. It was you that used my teachings for your own personal gain, and it was you that committed such tragedies even to a war in my name. So I apologize for any mistakes I made when my words were misconstrued, but it's apologies to Mother Nature because I created you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Sue Cosgrove.
Yes, it's Pakistani poet, and she's called I Speak for the Devil. So each poem speaks from the point of view of the devil. This is what the poet, the devil to the poet. Don't pretend that you're above all this. When it comes to survival, all your pretty words and delicate observations go right down to politics.
I think they're clapping for the brevity, Sue. Okay. Rev Burkhart to the stage, please.
forgot my book. So from memory, Mencius, 2,500 years ago. If you know the point of balance, you can settle the details. If you can settle the details, you can stop running around. Once you stop running around, your mind will become calm. When your mind becomes calm, you can think in front of a tiger. When you can think in front of a tiger, you will surely succeed.
Thank you, Rad. Next we have Joe Harding. Joe Harding, please.
Most people in Ireland didn't want to move with the tigers. We had a prodigal daughter situation in our house, and the following poem has resonance for me. A very original title, is called Poem, and it was written by Billy Ramsey. I want to read it last year, but we ran out of time. I waited 10 years for her beauty in this house I built by the water. Gave up my career, forgot my duty to my son, to my unborn daughter. The nights when she came smelled like nectar. I sang her flowers, kissed her sweet tears. There were other nights. I recollect the endless waiting, the cold bed, the years. So long. Where is the rest of my life? I cannot imagine the face of my daughter. I will wander the roads in search of my wife, my son, who calls another man father.
Thank you, Doyle. Next, Cal Doyle, please.
There's a girl you like, so you tell her your penis is big, but that you cannot get yourself to use it. Its demands are ridiculous, you say, even self-defeating, but to be honored somehow, briefly, inconspicuously in the dark. When she closes her eyes in horror, you take it all back. You tell her you're almost a girl yourself and can understand why she is shocked. When she is about to walk away, you tell her you have no penis, that you don't know what you got into. You get on your knees. She suddenly bends down to kiss your shoulder, and you know you're on the right track. You tell her you want to bear children, and that is why you seem confused. You wrinkle your brow and curse the day you were born. She tries to calm you, but you lose control. You reach for her panties and beg forgiveness as you do. She squirms, and you howl like a wolf. Your craving seems monumental. You know you will have her taken by storm. She is the girl you will marry.
Oh, okay. Mary O'Sullivan, please.
Taking off on a poem Michael O'Callaghan said earlier about nothing but good should be said of the dead for like a tough old burden. What I'm going to quote to you is a poem by Rupert Brooke. It's a poem written in 1914, and I heard it first back in the 80s when I lived in London, and Maggie Thatcher was being interviewed on television and she quoted this. I'm not going to read all the poem. It's called The Great Lover. Whew. These I have loved, white lace and cups, clean gleaming, ringed with blue lines and feathery fairy dust. Wet roofs beneath the lamplight, a strong crust of friendly bread, and many tasting food. Rainbows, and the blue bitter smoke of wood, and radiant raindrops couching in cool flowers, and flowers themselves that sway through sunny hours, dreaming of moths that drink them under the moon. Then the cool kindliness of sheets that soon smooth away trouble, and the rough male kiss of blankets, grainy wood, live hair that is shining and free, blue massing clouds, the keen, unpassioned beauty of a great machine, the venison of hot water, furs to touch, the good smell of old clothes and other such, the comfortable smell of friendly fingers, hair's fragrance and the musty reek that lingers about dead leaves and last year's ferns. Dear names and thousand other throng to me, royal flames, sweet waters dimpling laugh from tap or spring, holes in the ground, and voices that just sing. Voices in laughter too, and body's pain soon turn to peace, and the deep panting train, firm sand, the little dulling edge of foam that browns and dwindles as the waves go home, and washing stones gay for an hour, the cold graveness of iron, moist black earthen mould, sleep, and high places, footprints in the dew, and oaks, and brown horse chestnuts, glossy new, and new peeled sticks and shining pools on grass, all these have been my love, and these shall pass. Whatever passes not in the great hour, nor all my passion, all my prayers have power to hold them with me through the gate of death. They'll play deserter, turn with the traitor breath, break the high bond we made, and sell love's trust and sacramented covenant to the dust. Oh, never a doubt but somewhere I shall wake and give what's left of love again and make new friends, now strangers. But the best I've known stays here and changes, breaks, grows old, is blown about the winds of the world and fades from brains of living men and dies. Nothing remains. Oh dear my loves, oh faithless, once again, this one last gift I give, that after men shall know, and later lovers far removed, praise you. All these were lovely, say, he loved.
Thank you, Mary. Just two more. We have Rosie O'Regan.
I also got a book, but I think it's in my head. It's a sonnet by Shakespeare. No more be grieved at that which thou hast done. Roses have thorns and silver fountains mud. Clouds and eclipses stain both moon and sun, and loathsome canker lives in sweetest bud. All men make faults, and even I in this, authorizing thy trespass with compare, myself corrupting, salving thy ignis, excusing thy sins more than thy sins are, for to thy sensual fault I bring incense. Thy adverse party is thy advocate, and gainst myself a lawful plea commence. Such civil war is in my love and hate, that I an accessory needs must be to that sweet thief who sourly robs from me. Thank you.
Thanks, Rosie. And now we have, who do we have? Cedric Vicomte.
Well, that's from Evan Kavanagh Brennan. Sorry, I'm going to chop a lot of names. She won on the 10th December 2012, and the 5 words were Strong Chair, Tender Oak, and Good Father. It's entitled A song for me, a song for him. He sits, he stares, he sits, he moans. He rubs his, smiles, his life is whole. but time enough for rocking in that bloody chair. Time enough for rocking when we are old. Not so tender that tongue, not so tender his face, but chiseled like oak. Never a soft song from over magnetic fields. Never a soft song from that, from an out of place grandfather about to croak.
Thank you, everyone, for a great year, right? That's crazy. We have our own, you know, end of year. No ways. I have skipped a person. If there's anyone else who have skipped, please throw something at me. Mara Harriet, please.
I had psyched myself up to do this in the pompous old fart voice of Ireland's greatest ever poet, W.B. Yeats, but then I chickened out. Anyway, there might be some Yeatsian intonations here, but it's just the end part of Dialogue of Self and Soul. A living man is blind and drinks his drop. What matter if the ditches are impure? What matter if I live it all once more? Endure that toil of growing up, the ignominy of boyhood, the distress of boyhood changing into man, the unfinished man and his pain brought face to face with his own clumsiness. The finished man among his enemies, how in the name of heaven can he escape that defiling and disfigured shape the mirror of malicious eyes casts upon his eyes, until at last he thinks that shape must be his shape. And what's the good of an escape if honor find him in the wintry blast? I am content to live it all again, and yet again, if it be life to pitch into the frog spawn of a blind man's ditch, a blind man battering blind men, or into that most fecund ditch of all, the folly that man does or must suffer if he woos a proud woman not kindred of his soul. I am content to follow to its source every event in action or in thought, measure the lot, forgive myself the lot. When such as I cast out remorse, so great a sweetness flows into the breast. We must laugh and we must sing. We are blessed by everything. Everything we look upon is blessed. Thanks.
Oh.